One more item. Here's something a lot of us have in common. Broken appliances. Broken air conditioner. Broken down heating system. Broken down washer dryer. Broken down refrigerator. And if you're a homeowner, you know just how expensive it is to get one of those things fixed, let alone what happens if more than one appliance breaks down at the same time. Well, if you're a homeowner, you can get all of your appliances on a warranty plan that guarantees protection for all of your home appliances in case they break down. And best of all, it will only cost you about $1 a day. Call the Home Service Club at 800-264-3168, 800-264-3168. The call is free, and if you're one of the first 25 callers, your first month membership in the Home Service Club will also be free. Home Service Club, warranty plan, guarantees protection for all of your appliances for less than $1 a day. 800-264-3168, 800-264-3168.
Hi, this is Mike Connors. You're listening to TV Confidential.
Walker is an emotional and primitive man.
Do you remember when we met? Suddenly, we were together.
Lee Marvin is Walker, the hunter and the hunted.
What do you really want?
I really want my money.
I want my 93 grand.
I want my money.
Ed Robertson, law author, guest Dwayne Epstein. Dwayne is the author of Lee Marvin, Point Blank, an in-depth biography that reveals the Academy Award-winning actor to be a deep, very complex individual who was not only a generous actor, but a man who often took great risks in his acting and career choices. Dwayne's book is thoroughly researched and includes interviews with hundreds of Lee Marvin's friends, colleagues, and family members. Plus, it includes a very touching afterword by Lee's eldest son, Christopher Marvin. The publisher of Lee Marvin, Point Blank, is Schaffner Press. That's S-C-H-A-F-F-N-E-R, Schaffner Press. And you can find Dwayne's book at your local bookstore, as well as your public library, and schaffnerpress.com, amazon.com, and wherever books are sold online. Lee Marvin may not have subscribed to the Strasberg method of acting, but Lee Marvin was a method actor in the sense that he was very instinctual, and there was a very deliberate effort to what he did.
Oh, absolutely.
No matter who
he was. Angie Dickinson, when I interviewed her, she worked with him more than any other female actress had worked with Marvin, and she had an interesting take on him. She called Lee Marvin a method actor who was in control.
Yeah.
She said that a lot of method actors, and she's worked with many of them, are out of control. And she cited a specific example of an actor before a scene going, "You don't mind if I pull your hair before we go into this shot so it'll give me, you know, the energy level I need to get up to," and all this kind of stuff. And Angie Dickinson's reaction was, "Oh, hell no, you're not." And she said, Lee Marvin wouldn't need to do something like that. He wouldn't need to get out of control. He was always in control and knew what he was doing, in spite of the fact that his presence on screen, and here's an analogy his wife Betty, his first wife Betty Marvin made, that I love this. She said, watching Lee on screen, in certain moments more than others, of course, she goes, watching Lee on screen was like watching somebody throw a glass at a wall. You know it's going to explode,
yeah,
but it's that moment just before it happens. And that's what Lee was like. He seemed as if he would be capable of doing anything at any point in time, but he was always in control.
And it kind of goes back to something I think you said a little while ago, Dwayne, in that acting enabled, I mean, particularly the type of characters that he tended to be cast as.
Right.
You know, the homicidal maniac, the sociopath, you know.
Man of violence. Or a history of violence.
What we would call an anti-hero today.
Absolutely. He was an anti-hero in the sense that Humphrey Bogart was an anti-hero in the 40s.
Yeah. In that it enabled him to unleash stuff that he had inside him that, had he not had acting as a forum, it could have led him into more destructive behavior.
Yeah, absolutely true. And that was a part of the PTSD he suffered from his experiences in World War II. Now, one of the things I became fascinated with was, as you start to research or analyze a person's life and career, especially their career, it's inevitable that you're going to see certain themes make themselves evident. And early on, it became obvious to me that Lee Marvin was drawn to stories, especially once he became established as a major star in the mid-60s. Lee Marvin was drawn to stories of violence. Now, it's no accident that that would happen. I mean, I don't know if he consciously did it, because he would often say in interviews he would like to do more comedy, or he would like to play the romantic lead, but he would say he wasn't offered those parts. Well, the truth is he was. He just wouldn't, you know, if he was offered one project versus another project, he'd go with the project he would seem more familiar with.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, it would be something like The Dirty Dozen or Point Blank or The Professionals. And the reason he was drawn to that kind of thing is because of his own personal experience in life. And he was able to channel that experience into the work, which was much, much, much more realistic and believable than had ever been seen in American films before. I put forth the thesis that Lee Marvin invented the modern American cinema of violence. And I definitely think that's true. I've been a movie fan my whole life. I've never seen anybody do what he did before him. He started it. And oftentimes, as much as he channeled that into his work, there was so much violence in him, he wasn't always capable of just keeping it within the work. Sometimes it spilled over into real life, as the reader will discover.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
We're talking to Dwayne Epstein. Dwayne is the author of several young adult biographies for Lucent Publications' People in the News series. Plus, he has written in-depth articles on the likes of Bobby Darin, Steve Allen, Sam Fuller, and John Belushi for Film Facts magazine. Dwayne's latest book is Lee Marvin, Point Blank, a comprehensive biography that not only covers Lee Marvin's career in film and television, but explores Lee Marvin's family history, his tempestuous formative years, his combat experiences in World War II, and his struggles with alcoholism, dyslexia, and post-traumatic stress disorder. The publisher of Lee Marvin, Point Blank, is Schaffner Press, S-C-H-A-F-F-N-E-R, Schaffner Press. And you can order Dwayne's book at your local bookstore, public library, as well as pointblankbook.com, www.pointblankbook.com, as well as amazon.com, wherever books are sold online. As Dwayne mentioned, it is available as an ebook and in the Kindle edition, as well as in hardcover and softcover. And as Dwayne just mentioned, at pointblankbook.com, you'll have a chance to see some extra material. So if you really want to learn the depth and, you know, the length and depths of Lee Marvin, go to pointblankbook.com. I want to talk about Lee's career in television, which has a lot of impact on his film career. But
absolutely. I'd like to say just real quick, too, TV allowed him to be infinitely more versatile than film ever did. He was able to play a much, much wider variety of characters on television than he ever did on film. Yes, he played heavies, of course, and he played men of violence, such as in the TV series he had that ran for 3 years, M Squad, that you mentioned earlier, but also through both anthology shows, which were very, very big in the early days of television. People always think of Twilight Zone and maybe Playhouse 90 or something like that, but there was a plethora of anthology shows in the early days of television, and he was on every single one of them, it seemed. And also, when anthology shows started to fade out because they got... I spoke to many people who worked in the early days of television, such as John Frankenheimer and Les Martinson and several other people. The reason why anthology shows faded was because it became too difficult a medium to constantly... have to reintroduce new characters and new plot lines before you actually got to the plot within this time frame of anywhere from a half hour to an hour, and there was more commercials needed. So it took away the ability to introduce these characters. Episodic television became more popular because everybody knew the characters. We know the Cartwrights of Bonanza. We know Dr. Kildare, and we can have new characters come in and introduce the stories that way. So, but when they were doing those kind of shows, Lee Marvin was once again on every single one of them. He was on Wagon Train several times. He was on The Untouchables three or four times, and oftentimes playing bad guys. But also, too, there were some shows that I was lucky enough to view via the, it's now called the Paley Center, but when I was doing research there, it was called the Museum of Television and Radio. I saw him on an anthology, a half-hour anthology show where he played a stand-up comedian, and it was called The Joke's on Me. Mm-hmm. Now, the plot was, I have to admit, was kind of lame, but it was interesting for two reasons. Number one, his agent in the show was played by the legendary comic Bud Abbott. Mm-hmm. of Abbott and Costello fame, and I think it may be the only time I've ever seen him in a straight dramatic role, but more importantly, the beginning and the end of the show, Lee Marvin does a stand-up act, and he's brilliant. I was amazed. His comic timing was razor sharp. He had this flippant look in his eye, and it was he reminded me a lot of Lenny Bruce, who I'm a big fan of. His delivery was like that incisive, and I thought, it's a shame he wasn't allowed to do more of this kind of thing. And on television, with that example of, I think the show was called, like I said, The Joke's on Me, and I think it was part of the Alcoa TV Theater, I think it was called. But he also did shows where he was Emmy-nominated for a TV show called People Need People. It was based on a true story of the beginning of group therapy to deal with the trauma soldiers go through in war, so, you know, ironically enough. And Lee played a war-hardened Marine. Who was being treated by a character played by Arthur Kennedy, who was, and the character is based on a friend of Lee Marvin's, a gentleman named Dr. Harry Wilner, who did exactly that. He introduced group therapy to combat veterans, and Lee was Emmy nominated for it. Well, and he's wonderful in it.
He was wonderful in it. He was, you know, as you mentioned, just there are a lot of great stories about his work in television, particularly some of the early things he did. I mean, Jack Webb has a great story about Lee's.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to get that interview. And, I mean, I didn't interview Jack Webb, but I found lost footage of an interview Jack Webb had done through another film historian, and I got to see it, and it's hysterical. From an episode of Dragnet that Lee was on, I believe it was on the first season of Dragnet, where he played a psychopathic health food fanatic who goes on a killing spree, and he won't tell his story unless they buy him lunch at a health food restaurant, which is, you know, really kind of weird for the early 1950s. Jack Webb tells the story about how they were doing the scene, and while they were shooting it, Lee was supposed to be eating apricots, which indeed he was, but he had dialogue, and instead of spitting it out, which he thought would be uncouth, he parked them in his cheeks while he was talking. And Jack Webb said, Lee was a trooper, you know, his cheeks started to puff up like a squirrel, but he kept talking.
Well, I guess even then he understood, you know, one of the vagaries of television is that you got to get it done quickly, and you don't always have time for a retake. So,
That's right, and you don't have a second chance. And I was lucky enough to interview people who worked with Lee in live television. Dragnet was filmed, even in the beginning. People who work in live television, they always have stories about, you know, the mishap, the mistake. My favorite being the one that Eddie Albert told.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, that's my personal favorite. And that's why it's also one of the lengthiest, because I thought it deserved to be told in detail. And what Eddie, I was lucky enough to visit Eddie Albert in his home, who worked with Lee several times in several films, too. But in a TV show he did, where it was called, I believe it was an episode of an anthology show, and the episode was called Outlaw's Reckoning, I believe. And he said that he and Lee rehearsed this fight scene they had at the end of the show that was only supposed to go 3 minutes on the air. Well, they wound up misstepping, and Eddie Albert got, he didn't get hurt, but he got trapped under a table that wasn't supposed to fall, and he was supposed to win the fight, but he couldn't get up from under the table. And Lee Marvin was ingenious in how he got him out of that, and I'll let the reader find that out for themselves.
And you can find out by yourself by picking up a copy of Lee Marvin Point Blank at pointblankbook.com, www.pointblankbook.com. And in addition to that story with Eddie Albert, there are many other examples of Lee's generosity as a person with his fellow actors, whether on stage or whether on film. And you hear lots of stories about this, but in this case, it was certainly true. I mean, he was the type of actor who not only would help. I mean, there's some actors that are only in it for, you know, they just memorize their pages and they don't care what anybody else does. He was not one of them. Dwayne, and he looked out for his fellow actors.
Indeed.
And the other thing, and this goes back to the dichotomy of Lee Marvin. You know, we think of him as this violent, tough guy, the sociopath, but particularly with some of the actresses that he worked with, he not only was protective of them. The Kay Len story, you know, pops to mind.
I thought that's where you were going. Yeah, it sounded like, yeah, I interviewed Kay Len. What a sweet, sweet woman.
Yeah.
And because she co-starred with Lee in The Great Scout and Cat House Thursday, not one of his better efforts. But
yeah.
She told me about how incredibly protective Lee was of her and not obvious about it. It's not like he walked around with his hands on his hips like Superman going, you know, I'm going to take care of you, young lady.
Yes.
She just said she was very aware of the fact that Lee was always watching her when she had a dangerous scene to do, like ride double on a horse with him. And he kept his hand out of camera, but kept her on the horse and just made sure nothing happened to her and that she was okay and, you know, things like that. One thing I'd like to mention, if I may, just real quick to go back to the thing about television, one of the things that I don't think Lee Marvin gets enough credit for is how naturally funny he was. He had a wonderful sense of humor. And one of my favorite stories, unfortunately it's a short story in the book, but it says volumes about the kind of sense of humor he had. He was wicked. Beverly Garland, the great Beverly Garland, I was lucky enough to interview her. She told me this story about they were doing an episode of the old Richard Boone show, Medic, where Richard Boone plays a doc. In fact, it was the pilot of the show. I love this story. They filmed it at L.A. County Hospital, and Lee and Beverly Garland played a young married newlywed. It's a very, very touching, poignant, sad episode where she's pregnant, and she has leukemia, and she's dying. And they were filming it at L.A. County Hospital, and she had this big prosthetic on to make her look pregnant. And every time they went to lunch, they would be standing in line in the cafeteria, and Lee would look around to make sure there was a crowd. And when there was a crowd, he'd haul her off and belt her in the stomach as hard as he could. She'd double over in pain, and people would, like, jump out over Lee going, oh, my God, did you see what that man did to his wife? And Beverly Garland said he did this every day. He thought it was hysterical. And Beverly thought it was funny, too. And she was like, Lee, you've got to stop doing this. They're going to hang you.
Of course.
But because it was a prosthetic, he got away with it.
Absolutely. You mentioned he didn't get a chance to do comedy, the role for which he won the Oscar, you know, Kid Chalene. I mean, that was a parody of Westerns. And again, this is one of those things that means what it means. It was the role that won him the Academy Award, but it was directed by a man who was associated with television.
Correct. And absolutely right, directed by Elliot Silverstein, who I got to interview in depth, and he told me that television, his work in television, his experience in television, is what helped him get Lee Marvin to get a grasp of the character. Mm-hmm. Silverstein had directed several episodes of How Gun Will Travel, as well as The Naked City. And Lee was struggling a little bit with the best way, one particular scene in the film, the best way to convey what the character was going through. And Elliot Silverstein just whispered in his ear, play this guy like a Naked City loser. And that's all it took.
Yeah.
Lee understood exactly what that meant.
He understood exactly what it meant. And you'll understand what it was like to be Lee Marvin if you pick up a copy of Lee Marvin Point Blank by our guest, Dwayne Epstein. We'll continue our conversation with Dwayne after this quick time out here on TV Confidential.
I don't want to take up too much of your time. There's too many people to correctly thank for my career. I think, though, that half of this belongs to a horse someplace out in the back.
An adult elephant can weigh up to 6 tons. The average person, 150 pounds. Ever heard of carfentanil? It's a large wild animal tranquilizer. Illegal drug dealers lace heroin with it. It can kill the average human. If you or a loved one is addicted to opiates, even pain pills, don't wait until it's too late. Call the Detox and Treatment Helpline now. We care. Many of us have been where you are. We'll take you or a loved one away from the drug environment to a place you can clean out safely. Plus, we'll work with your insurance company to make sure you get the treatment you need. And with a Family Medical Leave Act, you're allowed by law to get away for help without telling your employer why. Call now to save a life.
866-490-3991. 866-490-3991. 866-490-3991.
Alexa users, you can now listen to TV Confidential on your smart speaker by just saying, "Alexa, play TV Confidential." Enabling our Alexa skill is easy. To find out how, go to televisionconfidential.com/Alexa.
Hello, this is Robert Wagner, and you are listening to TV Confidential.
45 years of the Rockford Files, revised, third edition. The complete history of the Rockford Files on television, now completely updated with more than 20 new interviews, additional photographs, and a whole lot more. 45 years of the Rockford Files, available now at rockford45.com, rockford45.com.
Attention timeshare owners. This is an urgent consumer alert from the Timeshare Exit Hotline, a national company specializing in helping consumers legally get out of their expensive timeshare contract. Our experienced partners are offering you a way to legally get rid of your timeshare. You'll never pay another timeshare maintenance bill again, and all your obligations will be terminated. You can begin saving today. Even if you've tried another company to get rid of your timeshare, call and see if we can help you. At the Timeshare Exit Hotline, we only accept payment after an agreement has been made to get you out of your timeshare. Make this complimentary free call and learn how our honest partners can help anyone, anywhere, legally get out of their timeshare nightmare.
800-715-6093. 800-715-6093. 800-715-6093. That's 800-715-6093.
This portion of TV Confidential is sponsored by Uber. Enter the promo code TV Confidential, all one word, when you download the app at get.uber.com/go/TV Confidential, and you'll receive a free first ride up to $20.
Be part of our conversation. If you like what you hear, have thoughts on this week's program, or have an idea for a future edition of TV Confidential, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at talk@tvconfidential.net, talk@tvconfidential.net. You can also message us at facebook.com/tvconfidential, x.com/tvconfidential, or at TV Confidential on Instagram. And if you're listening to us on the TV Confidential podcast, please be sure to hit the subscribe button.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.